Welcome back. You're listening to the Mighty 690, AM 690, WIST New Orleans. My name is Eric Asher. Go to 3 o'clock this afternoon. Stick around. Corey Johnson steps in 3 to 6 on the Mighty 690. At about 2:30 this afternoon, we'll have a visit from Juan Kincaid of Channel 4 Sports. Probably the most opinionated TV sportscaster there is in the city. We'll get his take on LSU, also the Hornets, as well as the New Orleans Saints. But right now, we're going to turn our attention to what's going on in the churches here in the city of New Orleans. Alden Hagedorn is with us. Of course, Alden is trying to keep St. Henry's Church open and trying to also keep, obviously, other churches that are being suppressed by the archdiocese open here in the city of New Orleans. Alden, how you doing, my man?
Oh, I'm all right. Life's going on, man.
First of all, if you would, explain to the audience, have you been actually physically staying in St. Henry's Church for the last couple of weeks?
We have had people in there, and the number has grown. My wife has actually been there more than I have. I have a pretty heavy evening schedule with dealing with some of the other dealings, mm-hmm. with some of the other operations of the parish, trying to get it back up and running. And you know, if she needs somebody over there with her, I'll go. If she can't make it, I mean, we all take turns, but she's been there more than I have.
How many people do you guys have right now that are working in tandem to try to keep the church open, obviously, that are staying there on a 24-hour basis?
About 75.
75 people that are part of the parish, that give their time. And how long do each of these folks stay there?
We do 4-hour shifts. You know, at minimum, we've always had a minimum of 2 people. In the late night shift, you know, going from, you know, from 10 o'clock to 2 in the morning and then from 2 to 6, you know, that's usually what we have, is about 2. Now, sometimes in the day, because, you know, every 4 hours we change, so like from 6 to 10 and then 10 to 2 in the afternoon, you know, we may have 7 or 8 people in there because, you know, it's a lot easier for retired people to come in the afternoon,
sure.
or people getting off of work coming in from, say, 6 to 10. But, you know, the late night shift, you know, that's the thinnest. But we always have a minimum of 2. And, you know, it's been going on now for 3 weeks and 3 days.
Wow, 3 weeks, 3 days.
Mm-hmm.
Wow. Now, the electricity everything's still on at the church?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, everything is still on. We have power, we have water, we have a bathroom in the church.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, I mean, it's very peaceful. So, you know, a lot of people come in, will pray, obviously, as a church, and
yes.
although they claim it's not, but a lot of holy things have gone on in the building, so we still consider it a church.
Quite a few.
Yeah, people will come in and read, and, you know, and on Sunday morning we have a prayer service at 10:30. We do a rosary, and we give everybody a parish update. We're continuing with the ministries that we have done as parishioners for years. We're doing a Christmas angel tree where you pick an angel off the tree and has a child's name, and we, you know, accepting monetary contributions to, you know, these needy children. We're doing a food drive. We'll have a Christmas, you know, carol social evening for our parishioners. We're going on just as if that church was in existence, because it's our goal to get it back up and running.
I guess my question is, the Archdiocese says they now control that property, now so they control that, I guess, to control that church. Can they cut utilities off on you guys? In Boston, what were some of the things that the Archdiocese did up there, if anything, to try to stop these parishioners from occupying the churches they were in? And if they did anything, what did they do? And do you guys have any fear that type of tactic will be used with you?
Well, we're told it's not. We're told they're going to maintain the property just as they've maintained all their property. And that sort of scares me, because some of the property that they say they maintain does not look too good. Go drive by Our Lady of Lourdes on Napoleon
mm-hmm.
Avenue.
Right.
But, you know, as of now, they're saying they're going to maintain all the property and there's going to be no confrontation with anybody, you know, at the vigil. Now, in Boston, some parishes some churches they have left completely alone. Others, I know there was one where they turned off the power, and they put space heaters in there. They felt as though that was a fire hazard. Of course, it gets a lot colder in Boston than it does in New Orleans. So they came in and they put the power back on. They cut water off in one place, so they went and got, you know, the portalettes. They put them out there in front of the church and the property. When they said that, it didn't look too good, so they put the water back on. So every archdiocese has its way of dealing with it. You know, really, you know, what we want, Eric, you know, we want a respectful dialogue with the archdiocese. why can't we have at least a mass there a week? We want to have our keep our identity as a 152-year-old parish. We're willing to work with the other parishes, but we're not willing to go and say, okay, shut us down. We don't exist anymore. We're just going to be herded off like cattle into the night. That's what we're not doing. So, you know, we're willing to work with the Archdiocese. I mean, this is a small parish, as you know, Eric.
Sure.
I mean, it's 350, 360 families. Yeah, we got 75 people right now, and that number's growing. I mean, when we walked out of there for our last Mass, we had a core group of about 20, 25 people. We knew that would be tough. But people are realizing this is the only way we can keep this issue on the front burner, and this is the only way we can let the Archdiocese know, you know, that we are very much serious about keeping this church open. So with that number, the momentum has grown, and our numbers are now grown to about 75.
Alden Hagedorn is part of St. Henry's Church, trying to keep that church open even after the suppression orders came down from the Archdiocese. You mentioned all you want is dialogue at this point. Have you gotten any indication that the Archdiocese will sit down with those members of St. Henry's that are occupying the church, that are trying to keep that church open? Have you gotten any indication that the Archbishop will sit down with you?
Yeah, one word answer, no. I mean, they refuse to deal with us at this stage. Ms. Comiskey has said on television and other, you know, radio stations that I've heard her, you know, the question's been asked, how long can these people stay there? And her answer is, well, we're not going to go in there and disturb them at this time. So the answer is, so they can stay in there forever, in her, you know, scripted answer. Well, we're not going in affecting them at this time. I mean, come on, you know, if we're willing to go on forever, are they not going to one day say forever is an awful long time? Let's talk about this.
Yes.
Now, you know, again, you know, we never get, when I said respectful dialogue, that means we don't want a scripted answer. We want answers to our questions, and we want to give the Archdiocese answers to their questions. They keep saying this is due to a change in demographics, a shift in population, and a pre-shortage. By their own numbers, these numbers do not exist. There is right now 171 active priests in 108 parishes. That doesn't sound like a shortage. Then the next thing they say is that 18 are going to retire in the next 5 years. Okay, that brings it down to 153 active priests in 108 parishes. Plus, you've got retired priests who will be still willing to serve. And we have three priests in that church, all who were willing to stay there. One was retired, still doing sacramental work. One is a chaplain in a hospital, still doing his sacramental work. And one was our pastor, who's 66, but is willing to stay on for another, you know, maybe five years at least, maybe 10, who knows. But we can't get the answer. And then we say the change in demographics. Sure, the population of New Orleans as a whole is lower than it was 10 years ago, but the population uptown isn't lower.
No, everything's shifting uptown.
Our numbers have increased, so don't look at a blanket of New Orleans and say, oh, the population shifted, so let's start shutting down churches. It's unfortunate that the population has to shift in the east and, you know, in the area where you live. And I mean, yeah, it was devastated by floodwaters.
Sure.
We weren't. So why are we getting thrown into this whole loop of population shifts when we've got all this viable property, we've got tenants in all of our buildings, we have a steady income stream, and we're extremely healthy? Just makes no sense to me.
Where are the members of the congregation right now, the former St. Henry's congregation, worshiping? Have they gone to St. Stephen's? Or are they refusing to go to St. Stephen's at this point?
I've heard a handful have gone over there basically just to see what's going on over there. You know, and in the Clarion Herald, the Archdiocesan newspaper, the pastor has said that, you know, these are his parishioners and he does want to communicate with them. Well, we're waiting. I mean, you know, we would like to tell him. Or not tell him, but again, we don't want to tell anybody. We want to ask, and we want to offer our services as a parish to work with St. Stephen's. The pastor over there is a Monsignor. He spent time in Rome with the Congregation of the Clergy, which is the same group we're appealing to.
Mm-hmm.
So he should be familiar with what's going on. And I think if he wanted to have dialogue with us, and I've never met the man. I've never met him. I understand he's a very intelligent man. I know people who've known him for years. I really look forward to meeting with him. I was sort of hoping that by this time he would have said, I want to meet with the leadership of St. Henry. So when he's willing to do that, we will certainly be willing to meet with him. But to get back to your question, a few people have gone down there just to see what's going on. I would say the majority of our members right now have gone to either your alma mater. A lot of them go to St. Francis of Assisi on State Street. I think we have a very good number that go there. Mm-hmm. A number are going into the back of the channel. You know, those uptown people,
sure.
they like the channel.
Yes.
They're going to St. Mary's Assumption.
Mm-hmm.
I personally, the last 2 weeks, I guess I'm like a gypsy. I just travel. Last week I went to Mata Della Rosa at 5:30, and the week before, on the way to the Hornets game, I went to St. Patrick's at 4 o'clock. So, I'm going. This time and it allows me to go. I find a parish and I go. Right now, I have a problem, as most of us do, just being herded over to St. Stephen.
Yes,
it's not our parish.
Let's talk about Rome for a second, because I know there was a hope that Rome would intercede here, that you would have an opportunity through canon law to be able to appeal this process. Have you gotten any indication from Rome on whether St. Henry's and the other churches, because this is obviously more than just St. Henry's, the other churches that have been suppressed in the New Orleans area would have an opportunity to at least appeal to Rome?
Well, you do bring up a good point, because good counsel, our neighbor over there on Louisiana Avenue, is doing the same thing we're doing. They are in vigil in their church 24 hours a day, and they are doing their prayer service every Sunday morning at 11. So we do one at 10:30. They do one at 11, so people have an option of going to either. Some of ours leave at 10:30 and go to theirs. Some of theirs come to ours at 10:30 and go back to theirs. So, and there are other churches involved. Now, you know, the canon law, the code of canon law, gives you certain directives as to how you appeal this. When you get the actual suppression decree, you have so many days to appeal to the local archbishop and ask him to reconsider. He has so many days to say yay, nay, or just ignore it, and then that basically is taken as I'm not going to listen. Then you have another period where you go to appeal again based on criteria, again which he can say yay or nay or just ignore it. Then you actually go to the congregation of clergy. Here's where this whole thing got very, very, you know, disheartening, and you had to wonder about the people you were dealing with. We, Archbishop Hughes in April, said St. Henry's was going to be suppressed. We have been asking him to give us a document so we could begin the appeal process. He gave us the document 9 days before our last Mass. So the official decree came down just a couple of weeks ago. So we went ahead and filed the appeal as if we had gotten the suppression notice. We went, we did everything. Of course, when it gets to Rome, they're like, well, you got to, you know, we've received it, but we really haven't been suppressed yet. So it's little games that the archdiocese.
But if you haven't been suppressed, then why have the sacraments been taken out of the church?
Well,
why is the priest no longer there? If you have not been officially suppressed.
Well, we are now. We got suppressed like the week before our last Mass. So when we got that suppression, we had to actually withdraw the first appeal because there was no suppression to go with it. Mm-hmm. So now that started the process over. So the Congregation for Clergy in Rome did recognize they received our appeal, and they did recognize it would take time to review it. You know, when we think of, you know, law in this country, we think of a judicial system in the Constitution. Canon law is a little different. I mean, it's very archaic. It goes back, you know, hundreds of years, long before our country was even formed.
Sure.
And it's a little different system. Now, they will take time to do it, but we sort of had to start all over again because we could never get, you know, we were told to prepare to leave, but we were never given a suppression notice. Finally, just before the last Mass, we got the official suppression notice, so that started the ball rolling again. But we have received from the congregation in Rome a notification that they have received the appeal. Now, they will take, I think they have like somewhere around 5 months or 6 months that they can say we uphold it, we decline it, or we need more time. From what we're hearing, most of the time they say we need more time.
Alden Hagedorn is with us for a few more minutes. He's with St. Henry's Church, trying to keep that church all open after suppression. What about staying power? I mean, at this point, obviously, 3 weeks into this, I'm sure people are still feeling energized in what they're doing. We've seen staying power in our own city after Katrina kind of wane as the years go by. What type of staying power are you seeing out of the congregation that is trying to keep the St. Henry's Church open?
I think it's very encouraging because not only do we have parishioners, our own parishioners who are coming, we have parishioners from other parishes. We have parishioners from not even in Orleans Parish, a civil parish, of other churches who are calling us wanting to know how can they come in and how can they spend time, because they can identify that there's a great injustice been done here. So, you know, uptown people are fairly resilient people. We got hard heads. We don't just go away. So the numbers are encouraging that we've picked up numbers every week. It's also encouraging throughout our community. And you know, New Orleans people very helpful to one another.
Sure.
And there are people in other areas of town that have either come to St. Henry's for one reason or another. They may have lived uptown at one time, or they know people, or they just know that there's a great injustice being done here, and they're willing to help us out. So the resiliency, I think, looks good. Now, will time wear people down? I guess it could. Right now, we are not even addressing that. People ask me, how long will this go on? My answer is, hey, how long is a piece of string? As long as you want to make it. There have been some rumors, if you will, that there will be a change in the administration in the Archdiocese. Mm-hmm. The Archbishop is beyond his retirement age.
Yes.
We have been told that it will be very soon there will be a new bishop appointed. And this is not to say whether it should or should not be a new archbishop. The time frame says there will be a new archbishop. We're hoping that they will try to clear up this mess before we get a new archbishop. And when we do, we're hoping we can get at least a respectful dialogue with him. Very, very upset that Archbishop Hughes has just basically shut us out. But that's his management style. He was second in command in Boston. He left a lot of problems up there. When he leaves New Orleans, he's going to leave an awful lot of problems here.
Alden, on the way out, what would you like this community, whether you're Catholic, whether you're not Catholic, what would you like the community to do if they feel it's within their heart to come and help? What do you guys need?
Well, we still have an organization. It's as Good Counsel does. Let me say we both have organizations that are 501c3 tax-exempt organizations, bona fide, recognized by the IRS as charitable organizations. Ours is Friends of St. Henry. Ours are Friends of St. Henry. Theirs is Friends of Good Counsel. We still have to pay these canonists, these lawyers we deal with, and we still do works in the community. So if anybody would like to come by our church at 10:30 on Sunday morning, we have coffee and donuts after. We meet, we plan current events, and then Good Counsel has one at 11. So I would say if they wanted to help either church, stop by one Sunday morning and just say hello. Or if they can certainly call me, my number's in the book. They can call you. You can give them my number. I don't really care. If they want to get involved, if they want to just show up and spend a couple hours in the church, we'd love to have them.
Alden, thanks so much for what you're doing. And, again, you have an open forum here anytime.
We'll keep you posted, Eric. Thank you so much.
You got it, my friend.
All right, buddy.
Alden Hagedorn of St. Henry's Church, trying to keep that church open. It's just amazing of what these folks have to deal with. And, whether you got a horse in the race or not, at this point, to me, I just don't understand the suppressing of churches in Uptown. And it's not because I came from Uptown, not because I have a lot of friends that grew up and went to St. Henry's and other churches, but the demographic shift of this city should be toward the river. And I don't for the life of me understand why a church that is self-sufficient, that is not costing this archdiocese anything, is not having the opportunity to continue, especially a church which is much history as St. Henry's has. And I think it really is a shame at this point that people are having to fight for the survival of that great church. It really is. It is a sad byproduct of what is happening to this city post-Katrina. Let's take a quick break. You're listening to the Mighty 690 AM, 690 WIST. On the way out, don't forget about my good friends over at Southern Tire. Southern Tire, 737-1558 at Southern Tire. You can be rest assured if you're out of the warranty for that new car, don't worry about it. Southern Tire, they got that same great diagnostic equipment you can get at the dealership. And, of course, certified technicians that know how to use that technology. At Southern Tire, they're family-owned and operated. I'm telling you, folks, the beautiful thing about it is you're not dealing with a corporation. You're dealing with New Orleanians. So you got a problem, you go in, you talk to them about the problem with your vehicle, and I'm telling you right now, they'll get it taken care of. Southern Tire, they got the largest selection of tires in the region. Literally every major brand. I'm telling you, you can name it, they got it at Southern Tire. Whether it's BF Goodrich, Goodyear, Michelin, Pirelli, Uniroyal, Yokohama, if it rolls, Southern Tire stocks it. Of course, they got a great selection of rims. And of course, whether it's AC repairs, oil changes, or the latest T-Tech transmission flush, where they flush out every drop of your transmission fluid at Southern Tire, you can be rest assured they'll take care of your car like it's their own. I bring my family's vehicle to Southern Tire. You should as well. Southern Tire, 737-1558. Southern Tire's at Hickory and Airline. Southern Tire's your one-stop shop for all your automotive needs.
Eric Asher.
Today's talk brought to you by JCPenney. Hurry into the JCPenney Veterans Day sale. Save big Tuesday through Thursday with super hot buys. And get extra savings when you use your JCPenney card.
Now, more Inside New Orleans with Eric Asher on AM 690 WIST.
My life, my everything, and the answer to all my dreams. You're my sun, my moon, my God.
Welcome back. You're listening to the Mighty 690, AM 690 WIST. A little Barry White in the background. Nothing wrong with Big and Barry. Going to hook up with Juan Kincaid in a few minutes of Channel 4 Sports. But looking at NOLA.com in the break, I guess the city council doesn't take off for Veterans Day today because they're in session working on the budget. They've only gotten until December 1st. To be able to hammer out what they believe the administration can have in terms of money to be able to spend for this fiscal year. And now there is a move afoot at the budget hearing this morning. Council members Stacey Head and Arnie Philko have questioned the expenditure that is being asked for by the administration for crime cameras in the city. Crime cameras. Now, you know, the same crime cameras in which we had Anthony Jones, who was then the head of technology, the head of the Office of Technology for the City of New Orleans, where he went $3 million over budget. Oh, wait a minute. Here we go again. On a verbal commitment to the camera installer. It's funny how that happens again. Another verbal commitment. You know, we had a verbal commitment from Junior Rodriguez in allegedly in St. Bernard Parish giving SDT waste and debris the opportunity to use the transfer station. And up until a alleged letter that was brought to the forefront within the last few days after originally saying that SDT had a verbal agreement to dump sewage in the St. Bernard sewer system. Well, they came up with a letter. Well, now, remember, Anthony Jones gave a verbal commitment to the company LSI, Research of Huntsville, Alabama, to be able to go over budget some $3 million. Now, supposedly there's a new head of the Office of Technology, the city's Office of Technology. Gosh, are you kidding me? They got a new guy. They wheeled in a new guy. Let me see what the new guy's name is. Oh, wait a minute. M. Harrison Boyd, B-O-Y-D, Boyd, pardon me, is the city's new technology director. And he said basically that Gustav knocked out about 100 cameras, but he still would like to see the opportunity to have more crime cameras put in. And I love this. He says that one of the reasons why, and again, I'm kind of perusing this story from NOLA.com, but he's claiming, and don't get me started on this, that one of the reasons why they need the crime cameras up is just not because of the fact that obviously they're working so good as a tool to be able to stop crime in this city. First, are you buying that? I didn't think so. But now they want to have an opportunity to be able to let this be part of interoperable communications in the next storm. Now, let's think about this for a second. The crime cameras in the last storm and the storm before that were knocked out. Okay? Totally knocked out. But now because of all the problems we've seen with crime cameras – Now they're trying to sell us a bill of goods that somehow, some way, they're going to be able to, during a storm, turn these cameras on, and they're going to be able to check out certain areas of the city to see if there's any flooding or any possible problems. Are you ready to be hoodwinked and bamboozled once again? We're going to jump into this a lot more tomorrow. I can't wait to get into this tomorrow. But, yeah, now they're trying to say that the crime cameras will help us in case of another storm. The same crime cameras that didn't stay up in the last two storms. Let's talk to talk about something a little bit more fun. Well, at least it used to be fun. Juan Kincaid, the most opinionated television reporter, anchor in the city of New Orleans, joins us on the program. Juan, how are you, my friend?
Eric, you know what the salt and pepper used to say, opinions are like,
yes.
Hey, you know what, everybody's got one, so I guess I got one, I don't mind.
But we were going to play a little salt and pepper for you on the way in.
I love it, man. Yeah.
But and I'm sure that French, before it's all over, we'll have a little salt and pepper for you, just to spice it up a little bit.
I heard that. What's going on with
that? Hey, Juan, let's start with LSU first. And I had a long conversation with one of our listeners earlier and kind of talked a little bit about this in our first hour. You know, when I look at this LSU situation and you look at this team and then look at the quarterback situation, you go back to Les Miles and of course, the problems with Ryan Barilou, the fact that Derek Odom and other players got kicked off this team for offenses that might have been a lot more than what Barilou had gotten involved in. But because of Barilou's incredible talent, Miles seemed to want to stay with this guy really almost at the expense of the team. Knowing you have these problems, even going back to last year, and not knowing whether this guy was going to be on the team, off the team, knowing what you had behind him in terms of Jared Lee, in terms of Andrew Hatch, and of course Jordan Jefferson, the incoming freshman, why do in your opinion did this LSU coaching staff not look to a junior college quarterback that could have possibly bridged the gap? That could have maybe backed up a Ryan Perlow if he stayed, or if something happened, which did happen when he got kicked off the team, you had a guy with college experience starting in maybe not in major college Division I football, but at least junior college experience, that maybe could have came in and not put the Tigers in the position where they're in, where right now, at least I'm looking at this game on Saturday, and I'm saying instead of playing with 22, they're playing with 21.
Eric, you mean have a fallback plan?
Yeah, just something like a fallback. Just in case things go
bad. Yeah, in case things go bad. You know, I think Ryan Perilou showed us that things were going to go bad more often than were going to go good. I agree with you. You know, this should have been a fallback plan by Les Miles. And if that's not the case, he's not going to go that route, which obviously he didn't, then he's got to be a very good decision maker in terms of which quarterback can give you the best chance to win. Don't feed me that BS about, well, he has more experience than Jordan Jefferson or Andrew Hatch. Who has the best ability? Because if it comes down to it, you're looking for a quarterback this year that will make few mistakes, kind of like a Matt Moss did. You don't need a great quarterback in this offense to win. I mean, look at Alabama. They don't have a great quarterback, and they win because they have good personnel around them. So you need a quarterback that's going to be efficient, make few mistakes, and that they can create on his own a little bit. And I've said it from day one, Jordan Jefferson was the best of those three players. You know, Jared Lee is a young quarterback, and right now we're seeing him for what he is. He's a guy that gets, you know, that gets flustered in the pocket, can't do the job. Andrew Hatch is a running quarterback, can't throw the ball. So why not put Jared Lee in there from the start? You know, let him take his lumps, but he has more upside than both of those players combined. In the meantime, you go out and try to find your quarterback for next year, maybe a junior college guy, because right now that's the one position of many that's really holding this football team back. You know, I think the players, they won't tell you publicly, but they have lost confidence in Jared Lee. And why wouldn't they? Because the guy has thrown more interceptions than touchdowns this year. Six of them to return for touchdowns. I mean, his confidence is shot. And I don't care what he tells you, you know, it's a learning experience. Yeah, but this is Division I football at the highest level. We don't need a guy to come in here and learn right now when you got a team that has as much talent as any team in the country. I mean, this has been a wasted year for LSU, and part of it is to blame on Les Miles because they did not plan properly when you knew that Ryan Perilou was a bit of a head case, not sure what's going to happen with him. You put all your eggs in one basket. You know, it's like this is the John Brady syndrome, as I call it. He was going after DJ Augusta.
Yes.
It was the eggs in one basket. Didn't get him. Where's Brady now? Well, he's coaching at a small Division 1A program now. So, right. You know, and so Les Miles, you know, he's partly the blame for this as well, for not having a fallback plan, putting all his eggs in one basket.
Well, and not just that. Again, if you're looking at, you have three quarterbacks there.
Yeah.
And, you know, well, we had Glenn Gilbo on, and I talked to the audience a little bit about this earlier. We had Glenn Gilbo on the program from LSU Beat. You know him, obviously, writes for Gannett News.
Yeah.
And he mentioned that during the offseason, that during the Purple and Gold game, during practice, during when practice first started, again, you know the media has a limited availability in terms of being able to see practice. But what he was able to see was three quarterbacks who did not measure up to SEC-type quarterbacks, didn't have the consistency in throwing the football. You mentioned it. You can talk about Matt Flynn and Matt Mock. You don't need a game breaker. You don't need the best quarterback in the SEC of the nation to be able to win a national championship. LSU has proved that. What you need is a guy that can take care of the football. Don't get you beat. So why not give all three of these guys an opportunity? I understand you don't want to lose the red shirt on Jordan Jefferson, but you knew with the injuries to Hatch that he had during the year, at some point you were going to have to make a move here. Why not get all three ready and then have, you know, again, if you don't have, you have three quarterbacks, you don't have a quarterback. The LSU has proven that they don't have a quarterback, so why not play this young kid early instead of having to get in a situation against Alabama where you can't put him in because he has no experience.
Well, you know what, Eric? I think I might have put him in the game anyway after that second interception because I watched Jarrett Lee's mannerism.
Oh, yes.
After he threw that second interception, his shoulders dropped, his head dropped, and you can see the players around him going like, geez, man, what are we doing here?
Well, he pressed after that. He didn't want to make a mistake.
Absolutely. I mean, perfect example, third down and two. He rolls out. He can get the first down and then some if he just runs for it, but he's indecisive. You know, and even Keelan Williams is like, what are you doing? The first down, I'm blocking for you. Run the ball.
Right.
I mean, that's a sign of the kid right now. It, the game is too much for him right now. And I don't know if there's anything Les Miles can say. The only thing that will help him get out of this is by playing and you know, getting over the mistakes. But at what cost? Because he is not going to win a football game for you. Not going to win a football game.
Well, and now you got the again.
He'll lose it for you.
Well, and I'll say this: you know, you worried about losing the team because of Ryan Perilou. You worried about losing the team because there were a set of rules for Ryan and a set of rules for the team. But you have it. You can lose the team by not replacing a player that is performing well when every other position on the team is open for conjecture on whether somebody's playing well. If they're not, that there's a quick hook.
Absolutely, but you know what? Les Miles did the right thing with Ryan Perilou. I mean, he gave him chance after chance, and I'm the biggest fan of Ryan Perilou as anybody. I think he's as good a quarterback as I've ever seen in high school, you know, and he has all the ability, but the smarts, you know, the kid didn't recognize the opportunity he had, and he let it wash away. So now he's at Jacksonville State trying to repair his image and get to the NFL. So I don't blame Les Miles for that. I think Les Miles made the right decision.
Yeah, but it took too long.
It took too long, but at the same time, you're going to make that decision. You got to have a backup plan.
Yes.
You got to go ahead and start recruiting a quarterback. And look, Ryan Perilou, you were going to need another quarterback anyway. So why not go ahead and start getting that recruiting process underway? If you go into a junior college, the best junior college, their quarterback would love to come to LSU.
Even if they're sitting the bench. And all you want is a guy that can't lose the game for you. Somebody that's going to be able to run the offense and not make mistakes. LSU's biggest deterrent this year, the biggest reason why they've lost games, and I don't want to put it all on one kid who's a redshirt freshman, but you can't throw six pick sixes.
No,
you just can't do it.
You can't. I mean, you are giving the game away. And you know what? Now it's like we're all just saying, okay, how long until he throws the next pick six? Because he's been consistent with that. It's the one thing he's been consistent with. But, you know, you look at his throws there, and all of his throws have been high and behind receivers.
Horrible mechanics.
I mean, terrible mechanics. His throw, his release point, like, I'm no quarterback. But you call it like you see it. And what we see is a kid that's releasing the ball too high, and every pass is behind the receiver. Or it's coming in too low. He rarely hits guys. It reminds me of Aaron Brooks and Joe Horn. I remember a game three or four years ago when Brooks was coming across, Horn was coming across the middle, and Brooks threw the ball, and it was right behind him. And Joe Horn made the motion, said, put it in front of me. You know, the players right now with LSU are saying, put it in front of us. Hit us right here in the target. And Charles Scott said it best, you know, I don't know what happens with Jarrett Lee between the game and practice, the practicing game. In practice, he makes all the throws. Well, what happens is, the guys that are coming after him in practice are his teammates, and they're slowing down. They can't hit the quarterback. In the game, these guys are coming after the quarterback. They're trying to pop him in the mouth.
Some guys are gamers. Some guys are not.
Some guys are great practice players.
Yep. Some guys
are. Right now, Eric, he has Miles fooled.
Well, it was a three-game season, as I've said many times in this program. It was Alabama, Georgia, Florida. When you look at the LSU schedule, you had to figure that going into the season it was a three-game schedule, and you came out of it 0-3. And you said it early. You've wasted an opportunity with a squad that probably should have been top five, top ten, if you got a decent quarterback that doesn't get you beat.
And you know, it was a three-game season, but it really came down to a two-game season for LSU because, let's put the Florida game aside. I don't think many people expected them to walk into Florida and win. They didn't expect them to get blown out like they did. But if you keep that game close, it's an early enough season game and a season loss that you can recover by beating Georgia and beating Alabama. And next thing you know, you win those two games. You're back in the title hunt picture. And everyone's putting LSU in that, that makes them all. This team can play for the national championship. But now, though, because you lost those other two games, being blown out by Georgia and unable to close the game up against Alabama, now you're talking about where they're going to be going bowl-wise. I mean, the guys are making jokes about going to the Independence Bowl. But you know what? That's not so much of a big joke because if they can't win this, they should be Troy, but they can't win in Arkansas. And Ole Miss, don't count the Rebels out. They might beat LSU.
They're athletic, man.
And their defense is good, and that's the big thing. You know, it all comes down to the quarterback situation. If Jarrett Lee is starting against Ole Miss, this team has problems.
Yep. The loss of Troy early in the season hurt this team, no doubt.
Hurt.
But at the same time, you got to deal with the cards that are dealt you. They should have got Jordan Jefferson ready if they didn't have somebody in the wings. And we don't know what Jordan Jefferson is going to do this weekend. I mean, again, you know, he could come out and lay an egg this weekend, and when we could all say, well, you know what, maybe Miles knew what he was talking about. But again, that goes back to making sure that you went out and got a JC guy that could come in and bridge the gap for you, at least this year.
Yeah, I agree.
But
you know what? All fans are going to say, you know what? This is Ryan Perilou's fault. And perhaps perhaps it is part of his fault for not keeping his nose clean because this job was handed to him.
Yes.
But at the same time, you know, you got to have a guy behind him. Like, this is a major division. This isn't freaking, you know, Appalachian State or Southeastern, nothing against those schools. These are not schools where you know, you can't get the great players in there. This is a school where you get the great players.
If
you're going to stand out against the Floridas and the Southern Cal, you got to make sure you go out there and get those players that are going to make a difference. Your backup quarterback needs to be on par with your starting quarterback, like Jamarcus Russell was with Ryan Perilou. Perilou came in and think he was going to start. No, Russell was a pretty damn good quarterback.
Yep. Yes, he was.
It was 1A and 1B. Matt Flynn was a good enough quarterback. So that part's on Miles.
Yeah, and I think it's really all on Miles because, again, you know, if you can't criticize Jarrett Lee for the problems that they're having at the quarterback position, if it ends up laying on the coach, well, the coach should have saw this a long time ago. He knows his personnel better than anybody else, media, fans, anybody. He knew what he had.
He should.
Yep, no doubt. Go ahead. Finish.
I said the question was asked in post-game locker room after the Alabama game, and I think I asked one of them and somebody asked the other, you know, is Jarrett Lee warrant having 60 minutes to play next week? And are you opposed to making a change? So we're not opposed to making a change, but we're not in favor of that. You know, it's like we know what kind of quarterbacks we have. Well, do you? I mean, how much do you need to see to know what kind of quarterbacks you have to know that Jarrett Lee's not your guy and it's time to look elsewhere? That's the big question.
No, it is, and again, when you're halfway through the season, it's a little late if you haven't prepared these guys to be ready to go, at least in the first few games of the season. You know, you had other opportunities, even during the Tulane game, to obviously play Jordan Jefferson a little bit more in anticipation of the Alabama game, especially knowing that Andrew Hatch was hurt. So, I mean, I'll second-guess him on this one because I really think he dropped the ball on it.
Yeah, absolutely.
Let's shift gears. Let's talk a little bit about the Saints. You know, I almost don't want to, but a season with so much promise, Juan.
Yeah.
And you know, you look when you peruse this Saints roster, you see talent on it. Now, again, you know, I mentioned early in the season that I thought that this could be a year where this team could win 12 games or it could be a year where they can end up winning 6 to 8 games, depending on, number one, injuries. If there were some players that stepped up and ended up really emerging for this team. Obviously, the injuries have crushed them. You've got the possible suspensions coming down the line, but also you got the maturation process of the coach who doesn't seem to be able to get away from his hard-headed ways of calling a game as well. All that bunched together, you're looking at a team right now that's under 500, that has been basically at 500 since the second year of the regime that we got here. And where do they go from here now?
Oh man, I don't really know. And everyone's marking this Kansas City game as a win, and I'm not. I'm saying it's a game they're going to have problems winning, because you don't know what team's going to show up for the Saints every week. Too many mistakes by too many people in too many areas. That has been the mark of this regime over the last year and a half. They haven't won back-to-back games all year long. They haven't been over 500 since 2006. That's unbelievable.
It's incredible.
When you talk about the alleged talent they have on this football team, and every move that Sean Payton made right now, as opposed to 2006, every move he made was gold. I mean, that's why they went to the championship, NFC championship. But since then, every move he's made, getting rid of John Carter because he couldn't reach the end zone on kickoff. Mm-hmm. Well, forget about the fact that he hits 95% of his field goal. And the guys they brought in after that have been horrible. Can't even hit the ball broadside of a barn.
Sure.
Bringing in Jeremy Shockey at the time it seemed like a great pickup, but what's it like a knee-jerk reaction pickup? That's what you got to say now. And what he's going to cost this football team in terms of draft picks?
Oh, yeah.
I mean, I don't know if people realize that. You look at Velma and you look at Shockey. The Saints may end up losing their first and second round pick for this year's next draft coming up because of those two players.
I think they'll keep their first round pick simply because they can sign Vilma after the prescribed time. And as far as Shockey goes, he hasn't got enough playing time right now to warrant moving up in terms of the draft choice. But you're right. On paper, they could have.
It's possible. But you think about for Vilma, it's worth the loss. I mean, Velma's been fantastic.
Yeah, but you got to re-sign him now, though. Why?
Yeah, but you know what, Eric? I don't have a problem with that because he gets things that they've not had since the Dome Patrol days.
Right.
He gives him a middle linebacker that owns everything. I don't have a problem with that because that was the biggest complaint we had with Haslett
and
his regime. They had no linebackers. Well, now Payton's addressed that area. I mean, Shanley and Fujita are serviceable. Fujita's very good, I think. But Velma is cream of the crop. You don't let that guy get away. You give him what he deserves. He's been your leading tackler in every game. But on the other end, Jeremy Shockey was the guy that was brought in and supposed to be a difference maker. You lose Marcus Colston for a few games because of the thumb. Well, Shockey's supposed to be that guy to make them keep on going, not miss a beat. But he can't even stay on the field. Billy Miller's been your best tight end.
Yes.
Without a doubt. No question.
Mm-hmm.
He's been steady. This is a guy that was released, brought back, released,
yes.
brought back, released again this year, and brought back again after he cleared the waivers and all that. And hasn't missed a beat.
You won't release him again, I'll tell you that.
Well, no, he probably won't. But you know what? He was on the field during the last the second half of the Falcons game.
Yes.
Not Jeremy Shockey.
Mm-hmm.
No. Jeremy Shockey's been a bust so far.
He has.
And, maybe the Giants knew something that we didn't.
And I think of the familiarity with obviously Payton and Shockey thinking that was the next guy. Look, I was a guy that was in favor of Shockey, and unfortunately I've got egg on my face right now because I thought he would be a guy that could help.
Eric, everybody was. Mm-hmm. I mean, everyone thought this was like, oh, God, this is the next coming. Because we know what kind of player he can be when he's healthy.
Right.
But the question was going to be, how healthy can he remain in this football team? Can he play a full season? And so far, he's having more injury concerns than touchdowns.
And in hindsight, Lito Shepard might have been the better pick right there. Maybe using the draft choices to go after Lito Shepard, the cornerback from the Philadelphia Eagles, instead of maybe going after Shockey, knowing the type of problems you have on the defensive side of the ball. And I'm going to tell you right now, Juan, when you look at this defense now, Charles Grant is probably not going to be re-signed by this team. I would think that the amount of money that he's got, depending on obviously he's got the bonus money up front. You got to look at how you can amortize that. You look at the situation now with Mike McKenzie, who's the best cornerback on this team, who probably is not going to be able to come back. I can't see him coming back from this injury, especially at his age. You've got to go in with limited draft choices now and address these issues on defense and hope that whoever you bring in, it can make an instant impact. I mean, we're looking at right now where the Saints are 4-5, where now you're looking at the draft on how you're going to rebuild this team.
Randall Gay and Aaron Glenn is your starting cornerbacks this weekend.
And Randall Gay is a nice slot guy, but again, he's out of his element on the edge.
With Jason David coming off the bench as your number three
scary
cornerback.
And Usama Young, you gave up you moved up to get him in the third round, and this is a guy that can't even get on the field.
That's special teams. I mean, it's a scary proposition right now. I think this team is going to need to win 6 of its next 7 games to even have a sniff at the playoffs.
I got a better shot at the lottery.
Well, yeah, absolutely, and I'm going to be your best friend when you do win that. But you
don't
know,
you already are my best friend?
I want to be even more of your better friend. I think the conference is going to come back to the Saints a little bit. I think the Falcons are going to lose some games. No one's expecting to lose, but the Saints have got to win. They got to start winning some football games. They can't depend on anybody else to do what they need to do for themselves. And, yeah, the defense is going to be.